Thank you so much for being here this early in the morning. It's like a lot of people think there are no mornings in Vegas. We're proving them wrong consistently. And anyway, we're going to talk about measuring the IQ of your threat intelligence feeds. If you are from the internet and you do the Twitters, we have like a hashtag, so you can hashtag the talk and stuff that you hate about and us making fun of us. Please do, because I want to laugh of everything later, because I can't quite check Twitter here. It's kind of lame, but that's the way it is. So without further ado, I don't like talking about myself. I just brought here a very special guest, Ms. Wendy Nader. She's going to do the introductions for us.
You didn't bring my fez and my cup of rum. All right. Good morning again, everybody. I want to introduce these awesome guys. I'm a little annoyed with them because in my analyst role, I cover threat intelligence, and they, in this talk, just did something that I had wanted to do, but they probably did it a lot better anyway. We have Alex Pinto, otherwise known as the brain from Brazil. Is that right? He's been giving talks at all three conferences this week, and people just can't get enough of him. And his hacker spirit animal is the caffeinated capybara. Now, Kyle Maxwell, on the other hand, is a math smuggler. His spirit animal is the axiomatic armadillo. But I'm here to tell you that actually he is a fugitive time-traveling Karl Marx, and there's a reason why his initials are KM.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, I had to out you like that. So enjoy the talk.
Thank you so much, Wendy. Anyway, we're going to cover a bunch of stuff. We're just going to give a brief introduction about threat intel and really go into what is this crazy idea about measuring threat intelligence and what kinds of stuff we can do to measure. So anyway, without further ado, I'll just have Kyle do his magic, please.
Good morning, everybody. So we're going to talk real quick about threat intel. We didn't want to do just a threat intel 101 for those who have maybe thought about it before, but we were going to get too advanced because, honestly, the stuff that we're talking about today, we'll talk about what that really means for us. When we talk about threat intel, when we talk about intel in general, there's really two things that we really actually care about, and it's not IP addresses and it's not hashes. It's capability and intent, right? What can your foes, I hate the words adversaries and all of that, so I'm going to bring it back Viking style. What do your foes, what are they able to do, and what are they intending to do? What do they want to do? What are they planning to do? That's what you really want to know so that you can prepare on your end for whatever it is that you need to do. So that's the core idea, that what we're trying to measure. Honestly, most of the time, what we look at in threat intel is capability. What are they doing? What are they able to do? We don't spend enough time looking at what they can do, or rather what they're planning to do. So we'll talk about that a little bit. There are a couple of key concepts that I want you to be able to take away, where there are some dichotomies within this field. And so we're going to talk about the kind of these cage matches between things that oppose each other. So one of them is signatures versus indicators. So Dave Vitale, for example, has made the point very correctly that a lot of times the way people use indicators or indicators of compromise sounds like signatures, right? But that shouldn't be. If you're using them that way, you're doing it wrong. The idea is that an indicator kind of, or rather a signature says, this is definitely something that happened here. It's like a fingerprint, right? You have a very, very, very high degree of confidence that this means X. Whereas an indicator says, hey, look over there, there's something fishy going on. And you may have different levels of confidence. You may even have a pretty dang high level, but the reality is that it's not to be used for blocking. It's not to be used for complete confidence. It's supposed to indicate something that you need to go look at. The other thing, and I'm going to kind of deflate a little bit the rest of our talk here, is the difference between threat data and threat intelligence, and data and intelligence in general. Now, we talk about threat intel feeds here because that's what vendors typically label them as, but they're, generally speaking, they're doing it wrong. It's not threat intel because it's data. Data without context is just, what are you doing, right? If you want intel, you need to do a lot of things, right? You need to be able to establish some context around it. You need to be able to add some of that intent and capability understanding that we talked about a minute ago. And as we're going to see, you kind of escalate up the abstraction of what you're looking for. But since this is what vendors sell it as, we wanted to make sure that people at least know what we're coming in to talk about. There's also a difference between tactical and strategic intel. So tactical intel you can think of as the how and the what, like what they're attacking, how they're going about it, whereas strategic intel, and this is a continuum, this is not a binary either or, towards the strategic end, you have the who and the why. Who are my foes? Why do they care? Why do I care about them? And this continuum is important to understand what type of intel you're getting. And then very briefly, we talk about atomic indicators versus composite. Atomic indicators are an IP address, a packet string that you're looking for, a hash. And composite is when you pull these things together and now you start to get some value out of them, because I really don't give a shit about a particular IP address, but I do if I see it combined with these other things. Now, a colleague of mine has a concept that I like to, that he calls the pyramid of pain. And I always use it because I like to say it like that, the pyramid of pain. And the pyramid is basically this idea, that at the bottom of the pyramid, and you can quibble, and Alex and I do, about what's easier and what's more trivial, IPs or domains. And the honest truth is, it really depends on context if you're talking about domain generation algorithms versus phishing or what have you. But the idea is, either way, they're kind of at the bottom. It's pretty easy to get a lot of IP addresses, right? It's also very easy for your foes to change their IP addresses. As you move up this pyramid of pain, you get network artifacts that are a little bit harder for you to analyze and figure out what to look for, and a little bit harder for the attacker to be able to change on his end. Whereas now when you start to get to specific tools and TTPs, which are tactics, techniques, and procedures, how these guys go about what they're doing, that's much harder. It's much harder to change your process than it is to flip a bit and have the hash come out completely differently. Now that said, we talk about simple, easy, and trivial. As we're going to see through the rest of the talk, that's not always that they're simple and easy, but relative to these other things, right? With that said, I'll hand back over to my brother here to go into his analysis.
So, I mean, just a side note, I think if you did like the pyramid of pain thing in a falsetto voice, it would be most funnier, but much, much more funnier. But anyway, that's just me.
It would hurt my throat.
Yeah, well, okay, it's your throat anyway. So I guess the point here is, like I was talking about, I mean, should we care more about domain names? Should we care more about IP addresses if that's all you got? I mean, ideally, all our intelligence would be bunch of contacts in it. We'd all have like fluffy animal names attached to all of them. And yeah, it would be awesome. We would really understand what we're up against. So let's say that we... And I really want to work with IP addresses here. They have a bunch of interesting stuff that we can use them for. And the thing that is interesting for me, it's a finite resource. Like, people are always bitching about IPv6 and stuff like that. And the fact is, there is an intrinsic cost of getting an IP address and changing an IP address. Some places, it's easier or less easy for you to get an IP address to do bad stuff, right? Some people are quite onto it, right? Some data centers, some providers, they will like, if you try to do something a little bit weird, they will shut you down almost immediately. Others you like, you have to talk to them with email for like 3 months while they're just simply ignoring you, and stuff just stays there forever. So maybe there is some structure, there is some pattern there. And I'm actually proposing that if we're getting a bunch of these IP addresses, why don't we try running some experiments in them to see if we can learn a little bit more what this threat intelligence landscape is. And I don't say that like in the threat intelligence landscape, like all capital letters, like what the world is doing against the world and cyber war and all those things, but who is actually trying to get you, right? That's the thing you should be most concerned about. So anyway, let's try to do some science here, right? Can we measure how much a specific feed is going to help, how is it going to help us in our strategic defense practice that we're trying to do in our organization, right? Can we actually get something out of them? Are they just a bunch of numbers with dots in them? I mean, how can we actually measure? And I have some ideas, and I wanted to share these ideas with you. So actually, I put together all of this is GPL-3. It's a bunch of statistical tests and data visualizations that you can do. You do have to use R, and I almost did it on purpose so that you guys start to get to know some statistical languages. Guys, get with the times, man. Like in 5 years, it's all going to be data. I'm sorry, but that's pretty much it. So yeah, okay, there's some Python dude here beside me. He's just going to be bothering me the rest of the talk. Anyway, all the code is there. The sample data that I used for the talk is there. So you can rerun everything and just say, hey, there's a bug here. You're such a stupid guy. And stuff like that. Or you can like, look how I know how to use this graphing library much better than you. You can do all those awesome stuff. And also, all the graphs and all the data that I show here is in a markdown file. So it's pretty much, okay, here's some blah, blah, blah. Here's the code. Here's the results. So you can actually follow through if you like. It's all on the repository. There's a link to everything there. So anyway, let's get started, I think. How am I doing for time? Okay, I'm good. So just for you two guys to have a general idea, right? How did I structure this data? How did I try to like create a sample database or something like that? First of all, I was trying to extract what I'm calling the raw information from these feeds, right? And I extracted both IP addresses and host names because, yeah, you got a bunch of them. Oh, just a side note. All of this data is publicly available, right? So all this stuff that I've gathered and I'm going to show here, you can might as well just gather. And we actually have a treat for you by the end of the talk that we might just be able to help you a little bit with that. But the point here is, okay, you got like your IPv4s, you got your FQDNs. I did this weird thing. It may sound weird at first, where I'm calling stuff inbound or outbound. And it's pretty much, I'm just trying to differentiate very broadly between the types of threats, let's say, that these IP addresses and domain names provide me. I mean, not so much domain names for inbound, but so think about the way the data flows from your organization or your IP or your dingly thingy internet-y thingy, right? Think about the direction as things go in and go out, right? So if it's someone that's scanning you or sending you spam, I'm calling that an inbound feed. And if something that, okay, you have to access this website to download this malware automatically, or it's a dropper, or it's a CNC, I'm calling that outbound, right? And that's pretty much the list of the feeds that I was harvesting. There is actually a mistake in this slide, so you're free to call me out on the internet if you figure it out. But the point is, and all of this is documented, which feed is which, but if you guys have been playing around with this, you should recognize most of them almost immediately. So how did we prepare this data for the experiments that we're going to talk about? First of all, I only wanted to work with IP addresses. First, because there's more interesting topological stuff that you can work with as opposed to domain names. And I do plan to do something similar to this using Whois data in a future installment of this, specifically for host names. But I was only willing to work, and I only had time to work with IP addresses. So I just ran all the domain names through a passive DNS database, specifically the Farsight one. You just may or may not have seen Vixie here before me. For that day that I got this indicator, what were the IP addresses that were active that day? Right? So assuming that you had that data and you were taking some sort of defensive measure at that day, that would be the IP addresses you would have flagged as weird or malicious or suspicious or however you take your threat intelligence. So we also removed non-public IPs. We don't care if the IP resolves to localhost. That's obviously a parking technique, but it wasn't really conducive to what we were trying to do here. So anyway, we got this domain names and IP addresses and we made them a bunch of IP addresses. After we did that, we went to do some enriching on these guys. So we want to make sure that we were able to identify what were the AESs that were associated with the IP addresses on that specific day, right? So there's a period of time that we have the data for, and that's when we did those enrichments, right? Also country from geolocation databases. And we also resolved the remote host, also using passive DNS at the time. I had some plans for it, but we didn't quite, it wasn't really interesting. The data was too sparse. There was not a lot of cool stuff to show. So just a side note as well, although we are doing geolocation, right, there will be no maps at this presentation, okay? Maps are not a good way to look at data. Please stop doing that. I mean, if the country is big, you think they're more of a threat. That's how the brain works. They look at stuff, it's bigger, it's more important. Stop using maps. Okay, let's move on. this is a sample, right? And you can see exactly how easy or not it is to actually use the code that I put together to actually, okay, I'm gonna load this from my database and I wanna see it and I wanna see what data is in it, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see there some examples of things that people thought to be bad in a specific moment in time. All right, we got our data, so what we're gonna do with it? I propose three different experiments here, right? And I'm calling them novelty, and it's actually a pun, because it has both meanings, right? You can either use it because, yeah, that's how much this feed is actually refreshing itself as time goes by. Or maybe it's just like, yeah, I'm gonna add a bunch of stuff and take a bunch of stuff out. You know, you're gonna look like really active. But anyway, you gotta know how your feeds are updating themselves. You wanna make sure that whomever you're getting them from, be them open source or be them commercial, the guy's actually putting some work on it. Because, I mean, things move around, I guess. There's an overlap test, which is one that it's the most simplest thing ever. You're just like, okay, let's compare everyone against everyone and see how much they have the same indicators, right? And this is specifically useful if you're actually trying to buy something, right? Just get all the open source feeds that you can get a hand of, compare them against the commercial feed, and yeah, how much am I actually getting for this I don't know, I completely lost the word, but like this ridiculously expensive amount of money that I'm paying for this, right? And finally, the one that I think that's, it's much more exploratory, and there's a little bit more of math than the other ones, which I'm calling the population tests, which is, can the data that we're getting actually teach us something about our adversaries, right? Can we actually learn something from this? Foes. Can we actually learn something from this? Can we actually find some patterns on this attack? Anyway, population is tricky, right? I'm doing some examples here where I'm comparing against the whole population of IP addresses, where they should be at least, and also should ideally mean your data. So get your data and compare how are the IP addresses that your company accesses or is accessed by your company against the actual threat intel feeds. Anyway, we'll get there. But I was looking for an IQ. I wanted a grade. No, we're not going to get there. And specifically, I want to make sure that you guys understand that the idea here is to make sure that you guys are able to reach your own conclusions, right? Whatever I think it's right for my company, as far as the specific mix of threat intelligence, or I should be focusing on this and that, is going to be very, very different from whatever you're doing at yours. I just want to make sure that you understand. Feel free to publish your own metrics, you know, feel free to tell that X, Y, Z sucks or something like that. I'll try not to do this because, I mean, I kind of like data and I don't want to piss off everyone at the same time. So yeah, I want to get on their good side, you know. Yeah, if you want me to do this work for you, I can help you out.
You're so nice, Alex. You're so nice.
Yeah, well, I don't know. anyway, I will do more private research on this because all of this comes from the other research around machine learning that I do. So I had to go through all of this that I'm explaining to you to figure out which were the threat intel feeds that I would use in my model. So I just thought it would be interesting to share. Anyway, when a novelty test. So we're measuring pretty much added and dropped indicators, right? So how much stuff is being added day by day? How much stuff is being removed day by day, right? And if you run this kind of thing, you'll get something like this, right? This is specific for inbound. So Alien Vault is actually divided because they got both stuffs in there. It's majorly inbound, and like you see, there's a lot of inbound stuff. And it's fairly easy to get, like you just run a couple of honeypots and suddenly, yeah, you're like threat intelligencing all the way to the bank. That sounded worse than I meant it to sound. But anyway, the point here is, you want to make sure that your stuff that you're doing is actually refreshing itself with something. So you can see there's like a 20% refresh in one of them, sometimes 50%. You definitely do not want the guy on the lower right. I mean, they're not dropping any IP addresses, right? The red line is how much it's being dropped, so it's an upside down graph, and the blue graph is how much is being added. So this guy is adding a minimal ratio of stuff. This is all in percentages, it's not in absolute values, and it's not removing anything else. I'm not sure this guy is doing the work. It looks like abandoned to me, right? So it might not be a good one to actually keep using forward as you go forward. But not updating every time does not mean that it's bad, right? So this is an example from outbound, right? So also you got stuff moving up and down, you got some things adding or not. And as a rule of thumb, if something is being updated hourly or being updated daily, there's a lot of automated stuff going on there, and it's potentially getting information from other sources as well, and it's being presented to you with little or no human interaction and review. If it's something that's more like weekly or something like that, maybe there's some people that's actually doing the work and curating and everything. Of course, when I say all of this, I mean specifically about open source, right? If people are getting paid to actually deliver this to you, they might as well give me hourly, humanly curated feeds all the time. Otherwise, I should not be paying for them. That's my opinion. Anyway, it's cool because you can see some patterns, right? How malware domain list and malware domains, they actually had a huge spike on a specific day. If you guys are wondering, that was right about the time we had that no IP thing with Microsoft, and people got to know like a bunch of new domains, and everyone started sharing it. So yeah, you can actually see when stuff happened in a way. It's kind of cool. But anyway, do this test. Run this and see how much your feeds are updating, and see if does it sound right for the size of the company or for the kind of data that you're reading, that they're actually looking at it. I mean, it's a leading indicator of quality. It's not the last word that you can have. We can talk about overlap, right? More data is better, but there's so much you can give your Hadoop vendor to actually store all the data. So let's try to keep it only add data that it's not the same or it's useful. I mean, it's easy for me to say that because I don't really care. I do a lot of summarization on the stuff that the way that I consume threat intelligence. Some people actually use the fact that something appeared in multiple feeds as a quality assurance, right? A bunch of people agreed on this. They might not have all of them done the research. I just want to leave it out there, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. It's just that you have to make sure what you're looking for. So when you look at inbound, you get stuff like this, right? So the brighter the square, there's more overlap between those specific feeds. And this was a specific day in time. And you can rerun this test for all the 30 days that I have on the data set, and you can take your own conclusions about, who is potentially drawing this information from the same kind of honeypots or the same kind of research. Right? I have no idea what's going on in the sense that, oh, this guy did that. And honestly, I don't really care. I just want to make sure that if you're ingesting this and if you're working with this, you're not just like, oh yeah, I got 2 million indicators here, all the IP addresses in the world. But it's not like, yeah, but a bunch of duplicates, and that's not really helping your bottom line. Something that was actually, I found was very interesting, and it actually relates to information I've heard privately, is that when you look at outbound, there's significantly less overlap, right? So it seems that people are doing their researches or their work in some specific niches, and specifically some people, they will specialize in a specific threat. Oh yeah, I'm a specific zoos hunter. I'm a specific whatever, something else hunter. And I mean, a bunch of examples. What we get here is a little bit on the domain only feeds, on the host name only feeds, you get a little bit of overlap. I just wanted to point out that specific day on that you had that spike. On that day, there was actually a 25% overlap of potential indicators between malware domains and malware domain lists, because they all updated very quickly to add all that information, which is very good, it's very positive. But, and then you see that result also represented here, right? Because you can effectively measure the overlap that those feeds have. And you can also from this graph, you can very easily see that a lot of the stuff that the Abuse.ch guys put on their Zeus feed is also being used by Alien Vote as well, which also I think it's good. Not everyone. I know a lot of people who use Alien Vote. I don't know a lot of people who use the Abuse.ch stuff. But anyway, let's get to something which is a little bit more interesting, I think, which is the population test. And I guess it's interesting, and this is kind of a cornerstone of the research that I started doing a couple of years ago, which is, you know, maybe stuff isn't random, right? Maybe it's not like, maybe we can actually track, there's some sort of likelihood that some specific corners of the internet are more likely to be targeting you or not, right? And all the different information that you gather from those different providers or different feeds that you're looking, they will give you different information. And there is some sort of alignment that I believe that you should be trying to reach when you're talking about, here is my data, right? These are all the IP addresses that I'm communicating to. So potentially the threats that I have, the people who are targeting me, or the people who maybe have already breached me and like are exfiltrating data, they are probably from that pool. You know, it's not going to be like an IP teleporting thing, right? And I'm not talking about which type of animal, where from the zoo you come from. I'm talking about, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, but there has to be a way that the data is being exfiltrated. The IP address is there. The guy who is out to get you, the guy who is potentially messing around with your data, is on that list. So why don't you try to tailor the threat intelligence and the research that you're doing through the specific countries and AS's that actually make more sense to your data, right? So then we start just doing some comparisons and doing some tests, right? And we come up with some interesting things. I specifically separated the domain, the outbound and the inbound stuff here. And of course, I mean, on the inbound, China all the way, right? And I can see some people smiling here. Yeah, I can totally see you. And that's, I mean, but at least in my perspective, the actual penetration of those kinds of things, and people who are doing SSH scans, or they're like, they have this 3-year-old Joomla exploit that they're running against the whole internet, right? I don't think these guys are really gonna get in. I mean, if they do, you shouldn't be on this talk, you should be like on 101 or something. But the point I'm trying to make is that when you start looking at the outbound data, you know what, it's not that different from it is different in some respects, but the fact that China wasn't the first one, and the first one was actually the US, actually made me chuckle. Actually, if you squint, you can see that the actual proportion, and I'll get there, the actual proportion of Chinese IP addresses which are actually distributing malware is less than the actual Chinese proportion of IP addresses in the internet. So, I mean, maybe they're less likely to be hosting malware than other countries, so which I think is kind of funny. But anyway, you can play the same game with ASNs, right? And the prevalence of Google there obviously startled me, and I'll get to there later. And at first I was looking at that and I was like, okay, this is a bunch of parked domains. Everybody knows that when this stuff is, the domain names, they're not being actively used, like they're changing their infrastructure. So someone just took the botnet down, and then, oh my God, we have to put something else together. They'll just spike it all on 8.8.8.8 or 1.1.1.1 or something like that. And those are all owned by Google. So at any moment in time, like a very high percentage of your domain names from these open threat intelligence feeds will be pointing at Google. Be aware of that. But even so, I don't know. Don't be evil and all that. I mean, I'm with them. The thing is, I guess the point I'm trying to make here is this kind of population test, they can also help you keyway your feeds, right? And I'll get to the specifics of that pretty soon. I just wanted to show you the graphs, and now I'm going to get to the math. I'm sorry about this. But the point is, I don't like to squint, right? So let's do some statistical inference testing. Let's compare the proportions, right? So if I know the exact proportion of IP addresses on the US, right? Just get any GeoIP database, right? And make sure you are like keeping with it, right? It doesn't make sure to enrich in one database and use another one. So we can actually do an exact binomial test, which would be, okay, assuming that I can just choose randomly the IP addresses that are going to attack me, is that consistent with how the IP addresses are distributed? And even if I don't have the full population, right, and I'm only like comparing my sample of my data against the sample of the threat intelligence feeds, I can use something that's the chi-squared proportion test, which is similar to the independence test, which pretty much asks the questions, okay, these are two different samples of stuff. Do they look like they came from the same population, right? And it's a little bit more fuzzy and fidgety than the other one, and that's why the other one is called exact, right? But it's a statistical tool that we may have, right? So I really wanted to get an idea of our error measure, right? I really wanted to get confidence intervals and say that, yeah, it's something amongst these lines, but at least I can tell you, okay, I'm messing up here in this calculation, but this is pretty much how much I'm messing up. Right? And I can also use p-values. I mean, I personally apologize to Alex Hutton for using p-values and not like doing some Bayesian evil shit. But and he said it was okay. So yeah, I'm allowed to do this talk. Some people have to clear with their lawyers. I have to clear it with Alex Hutton. So the point is, if we're doing p-values, we're being very conservative. So for the number of tests that we do, We're assuming a 95% because that's pretty much what everyone does. But if we're doing multiple tests, we're actually dividing our critical value or the value that we use to, oh, there's something interesting here, by the number of tests that we do. So what does that look like? It looks like something like this. So I have this, I'm using this function which actually extracts the population from a specific threat intel feed. Again, it's all there, and I'm comparing it to my known MMGeo database. And lo and behold, it seems that Thailand is the winner right now, which maybe the proportion is 5% more than their actual proportions on the IP addresses there, right? Followed closely by the US. Okay, Russia's there, I'll give you guys that. And but if you go to China is the second least likely to actually be hosting something in comparison to the random proportion. So I don't know, maybe it was not these feeds. Maybe these feeds were not tracking specific actors for there. But that's not the point. The point is, if that's the data that you have and the data that you should be comparing, that's what you should be analyzing. You want to add something? Okay, you're just gasping there. Okay, did I say something wrong?
No, you're good, man. You're good. Just keep dropping knowledge bombs.
Co-presenting is hard, man. The guy's judging me right beside me. I mean, I can't really see you because of the lights. And this guy's like there, oh God, why did I get into this? But if the p-value is higher than our critical value, which is the last one there, it's pretty much, we can't really say anything. It looks like it's on par with the randomness that we would get. A challenge that we got when we reached this conclusion is that, hold on, I don't know what to call these countries yet, right? Come on, I mean, we do not have like cuddly animal names for all the countries. So we propose a guide, right? And so that as you're trying to create your own and you're creating your own threat intelligence with those statistical techniques, you can actually you know, call people and, I mean, attribute people to what they're doing, right? So just a clarification, Capybara is like southwest of Brazil, and Toucan is more like the Amazon part. I mean, there's very, very different hacker spirit animals. Just be conscious of that.
Where are my Texas people at? Yeah, all right.
Anyway, this is not a complete, this is not an exhaustive list. Okay, so feel free to tweet your own suggestions with the hashtag of the talk. We gotta catch them all, people. We gotta catch them all. Anyway, then we get to the non-exact test, so the actual chi-square test. And this is just a little thing that I did, trying to compare how the feed evolved and changed from the 11th of July to the 12th of July. Those are the same feeds. What did change, like from the one day to the next? And you see a bunch of them are pretty much the same on the bottom side, but then Thailand again is at it. There's actually a trend from this information that you're getting from your threat intelligence feeds that Thailand is getting more likely to attack you based only on the data and the geolocation. So if you got, I can see some of you guys have got like the brain thing going on, and that's exactly what I'm hoping for. There's a lot of interesting stuff and a lot of interesting conclusions you can get from your own data, and not so much in the threat intelligence feeds, also trying to do something like this. And by the way, while you're at it, at the animal thing, we do need something for Thailand, because they're like everywhere on this presentation, they're obviously to something bad. tweet it, yeah, we can't really hear you. So then I was bothered by this Google thing, right? And I wanted to make sure that I could understand if this is all park shit or if it was actually something different, right? So I ran the same test, the same exact proportion test on the AS information as well as the population information. And Google was like 10% proportion increase. That's like, that's crazy. That's too much. That's way, way too much. And then, what? Ah, okay. Where is he? Okay, I don't care. You told me. What we get there is, if you actually look into the data, you'll find that, yeah, maybe not so much. Maybe it's not just Spark data. There's some cleaning that needs to be done. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Chrome, but I'm pretty sure it's not malware. And so probably we shouldn't have like chrome.google.com in our threat list. But it's all right, it happens sometimes. And you just gotta be sure if you're consuming this kind of things, you're in the lookout for information like this. And maybe those tools can also help you do a little bit of triage, because no one is gonna look through the whole thing all the time, and that's pretty much the point. But anyway, I talked about a bunch of shit, and I talked about my data. And what about your data? How can you get your data to use those statistical tests? And for that, I'd like to invite back my good friend, Kyle Maxwell, who has put up with me through all of this.
Oh my God, thank you, Alex. So as you're pulling in these feeds, you want to be able to do this test yourself. You want ongoing data. In addition to being able to run these analyses for yourselves, you may have other uses for the data, right? In this case, we did a lot of the work for you, but ongoing, you need something to help you with that. So what we did was we are releasing this week a tool called Combine. You can get it right now. It's GPL version 3. And what it is, it's a tool for harvesting and processing these types of feeds.
I just wanted to point out that at MLSec Project, we're very serious about our needle in a haystack jokes. So this is why this is a combined harvester.
Right.
And I am not implying, but well, maybe I am, that that's all hay.
So there's a few different components to it. Reaper pulls it in. We really, really like this metaphor here, as you can tell. So we reap it in. That just pulls in the data directly. We'll normalize it to a very simple data model. We do the little bit of validation and enrichment. So we throw out all that RFC 1918 shit and things like that. Do the AS numbers, the DNS lookups, and so forth. We'll talk about that in a minute. We transform the data currently just into CSV or JSON. We just haven't released yet the Sybox and SIM for Splunk. And as this is an open source project, help us help you. Feel free to submit pull requests for if there's another output form that you want. We're constantly trying to feed more data into it. This can be your own data sources. There's a number of tools in there to bring in CSV, XML, straight text, parsing HTML, what have you. We have a number of feed sources bundled in there in terms of the URLs that it can keep pulling. That's not saying, we're not saying clearly based on the last half an hour that any of these feeds are good or bad. These were just the ones that we have, and we'll add more as time goes on. When we do the enrichment, when, if you're not familiar with the term, think metadata and metadata accessories. And so we're pulling the autonomous system and geolocation only down to country level from the MaxMind database. We do DNS resolution from the Farsight passive DNS database. That requires an API key. If you have one, fantastic. You can plug it right in. If you don't, go ask them for one. Tell them Alex Pinto sent you, and he'll get you hooked up like a used car. No, I'm just kidding. But Alex and the really good folks over at Farsight can help you out with that. Again, all of this is open source software. This is not commercial. This is not us trying to make a buck off of these tools. This is us trying to make things a little bit better and help you pull in these feeds and pull in your own data as well.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't think that's where the cool stuff really is. And actually, this is we had to build a lot of this as we were building out the research that we were doing for MLSec project, and we just figured out, yeah, but this is like very commoditized stuff, or at least it should be very commoditized stuff. So we want to make sure that we are replacing our stuff. Our internal stuff is being replaced by these open source versions, and we will continue to support them as we actually need to use them, dog fooding and all of that. So talk to us about the project if you're interested. If you like the specific CIQ test, you want to test your data against it, you want to, oh, but I don't want to publish my feed, we can totally help you out. Either you setting up your own stuff to do that, or we can help you out do the test for you, right? And I just want to, some very quick takeaways before we are kicked out. Look at your data. That's all I'm asking, right? That's all that you should be doing right now. And I will try, and as much as I can, to keep banging this point forward and actually providing helpful tools that people can use for that, right? I also feel very strongly about the asymmetry of information. So if people tell you something is good, don't take their word for it. Just try it, right? Just test it and make sure that it's appropriate for what you're doing. And anyway, if you just got data lying around, you know, we can take it out for some exercise, you know, we can play some games.
Like, fresh air.
Yeah, think about like data sitting, like dog sitting. We can totally do some data sitting for you guys, right? So anyway, thank you very much.